Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the Classic Series Redrive. Check them up. Let's get started.
Welcome into episode 92 of the Classic Series Redrive. Kyle Forsythe trucking across Nebraska on his way home from Madison Sale. Mark Hostetler trucking to a solar eclipse in Sandusky County, Ohio. And Logan Reinhold on the Reinhold Pack and Western Wear Studio soundboard in Waterloo, Indiana. Kind of nailed that. Mark, are you all ready for 4 minutes of darkness on Monday, or what's the plan there?
I am. I got a gooseneck on the back. I got Tim Meyer's South Creek wagon to do some South Creek. Clyde's is having a grand opening for their new barn there. My in-laws, Tim and Mary Myers. And then I got a pony cart and a couple ponies in the back. We're going to have a big party this weekend. When this comes out, it'll all be gone over with. But looking forward to it. The boys are pumped. They're going to be giving pony rides to the public. And there's a band playing. We're recording this on a Saturday morning, and there's a band playing on Saturday night here, and should be a good time. It's crazy. People are flocking in here to Sandusky County, Ohio, here in Fremont, and just to see this 4 minute deal. It's supposed to be a pretty good deal, pretty big deal, I guess, from what I hear.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that the moon covering up the sun for 4 minutes is such a big deal? But there's people from all over the world getting in areas where it's going to be the best view of it. And it sounds like that area is one of the hot spots, huh?
Yeah, it'll be complete darkness. And I read that there won't be another one like this until 2044, I believe. So 20 years from now. And hell, I might be dead for that one, for all I know. But it's a big deal here. If you're right here in the main trek there, and then the path of it, I should say. And it sounds like they're expecting 150,000 people coming into the county here over the weekend. We'll see what it's all about. But it's a grand opening for Tim and Mary's new barn. They bought an old elevator and converted it over, and it is neat. They've done a heck of a job. But Kaylee and I have helped them as much as we could on it, and it's beautiful. It's a really nice barn. They put a lot of thought into it, and excited for them. And it's the grand opening this weekend for it. And I think there's a lot of people planning on coming, checking it out, the way it sounds. Of course, people from within driving distance here anyway, so it'll be fun. You say you're on your way home from Madison. What was that sale like?
Yeah, it was an okay sale. There are a lot of nice horses there. There was Perch and Mare, D&D Gordy daughter that Lips That Raised, the Kaufman, had her there. She brought 52.5 to Enos Yoder. There was Perch and Gelding maybe brought 26. Another Perch and Mare brought 32. Another one 28. Belgian Gelding brought 35. Horse that Elmer Miller had there. There was a good sale. The top horses they sold well. There was definitely a little softer than what some of the earlier sale was. It was the same time as Waverly. I don't know if that maybe caused it. It wasn't the biggest crowd. It just seemed a little bit stale. I would say, like, the colt market, yearling was down just a little, and there was a lot of 2 and 3 year old geldings that were maybe not like extreme hitch horses, but were nice horses. They seemed to just be a little softer, but all in all, they had a good sale. It was a good atmosphere, a good event, good fellowship. They do a bang up job. It's a nice facility. I tell you what, the driving ring at that sale is about as nice a driving ring as any sale has, as far as size. It's more of a footing, show ring atmosphere.
Right. The footing in it is great. Some of the other sales are a little bit hard, but the footing there always seems really good. The horses can perform kind of at a peak level there, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, it was a good event. There was quite a bit of snow and crappy weather the first couple days, people coming in, traveling in. And then yesterday was just beautiful. It was 55 degrees, sunshine, and no wind. Just a beautiful day for horse sales. So.
Yeah, sales are kind of winding down a little bit. There's still the sale in Dover, Ohio, the Buckeye Draft Horse and Colt sale there in Dover. I believe that sale's coming up in, like, I believe it's like the 18th and 19th of April, if I'm not wrong. And then, of course, the National Clyde sale is coming up as well, the end of April. That's always, it's about a 4 or 5 day event to sell 100 head. But that's always a good time. They always have a good big tax sale and everything. And it's always a nice time. And that's in Springfield, Illinois this year again. But, yeah, that's kind of wrapping up the sale season, more or less, at least spring sales.
But right.
Just talking about spring, yeah. Kind of turn of the corner here a little bit. Make sure you check out ReinholdWesternWear.com for all the spring clothing and summer clothes. Clothing they got in there. Logan just said that store is fully packed with and stocked with spring clothes. And if you're looking for a gift, make sure you check out ReinholdWesternWear.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Logan does a fantastic job, and he's one of them guys. If he doesn't have it, I'm sure he'll get it for you. So, absolutely support all of our advertisers on the ReDrive. Keep this thing going.
You bet. Shipshewana Harness supplies as well. And it's getting to be spring. If you need anything last second, I'm sure Bob could help you out. Penwoods, if you're looking to get show horses fit. Penwoods Mineral there as well. And the jerky from Glenwood Snacks, you know, orders over $50 ship for free. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Ships to Canada too for our Canadian listeners. There's a option on the website to fire some jerky into Canada. Now they got a warehouse up there that they store it in and ship out of. So yeah, it's definitely a good snack when you're trucking down the road.
Yep. And of course Crystal Springs is our other sponsor, our quarterly sponsor this year. You know, Ray, they just do a fantastic job of getting mares bred down there. He's got quite an operation going. He's standing some studs, but I know a lot of people just take horses there just to get bred because they do such a good job getting horses bred.
Yeah, if you have a problem mare and stuff, I mean, they seem to be able to get it done. There's just some people that have a knack for that, and they definitely fit that mold. And you get semen shipped from some places, you know, you have 10% motility when the semen shows up. When you get it from Crystal Springs, I know our vet couldn't believe it. We bred a mare to one of their stallions from last year, and he's like, holy crap, we could breed 5 mares with this stallion semen. So absolutely, they do a fantastic job at Crystal Springs.
Yep.
Any upcoming shows,
also,
Mark?
The Draft Horse Journal is another sponsor of ours. Make sure they have the latest.
They had a booth set up there in Madison. The guy that took over from Talene's or working with Talene's with the journal there, and just a fantastic guy. I got to have a little visit with him, and he's an avid podcast listener. He says he really enjoys it. He's not a lot of times people phone in to do advertising and stuff with the journal and listening to the podcast and hearing everybody, he kind of can put faces or voices to and their backstories and stuff, and he really enjoys that part of it. Super guy and really motivated. He's found a real niche market with high end print media and in a niche market, and just doing a fantastic job carrying on the tradition of the journal.
Yep, good. It's good to hear. That's one publication that we need to keep in circulation. It's always informed. Shoot, they'll have a Madison sale report and all other sale reports in there and show results and all that good stuff.
He said that's like one of the biggest issues, because people, like, they'll keep those issues and store them and, like, reference back to them for years. on, you know, what happened at the sales that year. And
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, it's like an archive for our industry, for sure.
Oh, 100%. Speaking of clothing, back to clothing, make sure you check out the Classic Series clothing as well. Clothing as well on drive6.com. If you go there, there's a link right to the store where you can pick out some clothes, some summer gear and things. And it takes, everything's custom ordered. So, you know, it'll take you, you know, 3-4 weeks to get your product, but make sure you get that product. Make sure you get your shows signed up for the summer show schedule. There's quite a few on there, but May 15th is the deadline. And it's pretty important for that, because if you get it registered and there's a mistake made, you know, you can, you know, you'll have until May 15th to get everything straightened up and make sure everything's in line until that deadline passes. So make sure you get everything signed up. The earlier you signed up, people can get online and see if you made a mistake when you did register your show. So make sure get shows registered. Like I said, there's a lot of them registered, but there's more to come. We know that are missing. So do that. And the Hall of Fame nominations coming up here. Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, I just said it's so important because exhibitors are doing their show schedules and kind of mapping out where they're going to show. So from their standpoint, they love checking the website and kind of organizing their schedule of events. And then there's so many spectators that book special vacations and trips around going to horse shows. And it's so important that we have these shows registered and on the website for those people to be able to attend and support your show.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right. That's right. Finals tickets, those are on sale now too on MichiganaEvents.com. I think there's a link on the Drive 6 website as well if you want to buy tickets for the finals. And just one note about the finals, the Classic Cart Finals this year is the first year that we're taking the 12 top points. Doesn't matter which breed or which region, whoever's got the 12 top points will qualify for the finals. We're looking to pay $1,000 a cart to come to the finals to make it worth your time. That's the payouts that the Halter Series does to bring a halter horse. And we're aiming for that. We're not going to guarantee that, but I think it's pretty, you know, I think it's feasible and I think it can get done. So if you guys want to, if you can't make it with your six or, you know, you don't have a youth driver or something that won't be able to make it. You want to try to hit an extra show or two to try to get in there with a car class to be a part of the festivities and everything. Yeah, it's a fun time, and it'll be, yeah, you'll be able to watch the show, and not only just watch the show, but you'll be able to have a cart horse in the final championship there and be a part of everything. It's a good reason to maybe go do extra few cart classes.
Absolutely. SparkPlugCoffee.com, don't forget about that. Support the youth cart program, the youth scholarship program. So all proceeds to that go to the youth program. Anything else, Martin?
No, I think that's about it. This episode here, Kyle, me and you and Logan sat down with three, you know, I mean, you just call them halter legends is what they are. They show halter horses and always bring them out top notch. We sat down with Gary Nebergall and Dwayne Miller at Topeka at Shipshawana Harness Supplies in the back room, and Robert Detweiler called in. Just a great conversation about showing halter horses and what they look for and how to show them and fit them and everything. It's just a lot of information jam-packed in this episode.
Yeah, if you had a list of champions in halter that those three gentlemen have shown through their lives, it would probably fill up a 250 page book, I'm sure. Those guys for years and years have shown some of the best halter horses there's been ever. So just kudos to them for taking the time to sit down with us and sharing some of their knowledge in the halter industry, and just a lot of information. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's fun. We had a good sitting down and chatting with them guys, and hope you guys enjoy. It's once again, we've got some emails here recently again about suggestions for episodes. And if you have any, just send them in and let us know what you guys got in mind and what you guys would like to listen to. We're open for that. It's always great to have feedback.
Speaking up on episode 100 too, so we're going to have some fun things maybe in store for that.
You betcha. All right. I think that about wraps her up, and hope you guys enjoy, and see you guys down the road.
We would like to thank Shipshewana Harness and Supply in Shipshewana, Indiana, Mr. Bob Schrock. If you're looking for products for the show ring or at the farm from A to Z, anything you need, horse nutrition, tack, you name it, make sure you check them out, ShipshewanaHarness.com. Follow them on Facebook or visit their shop in beautiful Shipshewana Amish country Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. and Saturday, 8 a.m. till 12 noon. Call Mr. Bob Schrock, 260-768-7254 for all your draft horse needs.
We're joined today by three legends. We're going to have a little bit of a halter discussion. We're going to go around the table. These are probably the three most prominent halter guys that I can think off the top of my head. We got Mr. Dwayne Miller from Apple Creek, Ohio, right?
Orville, Ohio, actually.
Oh, where does Orville from Apple Creek?
North, about 5 miles.
You know, how many people live in Orville?
More than Apple Creek.
Really?
Yeah. So 500?
No, I don't.
So these are all repeat guests. We also have Mr. Gary Nebergall. I don't know, somewhere in Indiana.
Somewhere in Indiana, just north of Indianapolis. I don't know about this legend thing that you're saying, but the other two are, but I'm far from that. But I appreciate the plug.
What is the official town?
Arcadia. Arcadia, Indiana.
Then from Olwine, Iowa, Mr. Robert Detweiler, joining us on Zoom. The rest of us are sitting here, and Bob Schrock, Shipshewana Harness and Supplies, big shout out. Very good supporter of the podcast. So be sure for all your supplies and harness needs, contact Bob.
In the back room.
Yeah.
Where there's been many stories told.
I tell you what, there's some stuff in some cabinets around this back room. It's even got name tags on it. Anyway, Robert, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you.
Be good if you would have been here too at the sitting at the table here. We'd maybe crack the bottle that says Robert on it.
I didn't think my name was in that back room, but maybe it is.
Oh, we could make one up pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess that's all right. I wish I was with you guys so I could enjoy Topeka and all its things it brings out there.
Yeah, we wish you were here too.
How's foaling season going with you guys? Go around the table. You guys are breeders as along with, that kind of goes hand in hand with showing halter as being a breeder, but how's foaling season going? Well, for a
breeder? Yeah. At Anderson Farms, we have four Clydes and one Pertron, and we have five more Clydes to go. So we have way more Clydes this year than Pertrons, but so far we've been very fortunate. They've all wanted to live, and we're excited about what we got, and we look forward to seeing what's left. So breeding season started off wonderful, and then it didn't go so wonderful. So we're just kind of, you know, the weather pattern is definitely nice this time of year for warmest winter I've ever remembered. So it should be wonderful, but no, it's all going well.
Dwayne, my understanding you're on the XY chromosomes more than the XX chromosomes this year.
That is correct. We're sitting at five stud foals, and I guess have one more to come here in a couple weeks, but yeah, we'll have plenty of stud foals to sell.
Dwayne, you're mainly Belgians then, right?
Belgians, and we have a couple Clyde ponies, so maybe we'll have some fillies there. We have three of those to pull out.
On the Clyde ponies, what do you breed those two?
Just cross them back with a Clyde with pony. Yeah, they're a Hackney pony and Clyde cross. Try to get them in that 60 to 62 inch category.
That's kind of your boys' project.
That's the boys' project, yeah.
I always get a kick out at the Indiana State Fair. That sucker, he wheels into the best of show. He usually has one or two Belgians in that. And then they call in for the Clyde ponies, and oh, there's another two or three rolling in for that. It's like, man, you could leave some of them purple ribbons for some other people too, Dwayne.
We leave plenty of those purple ribbons.
So that's a Clyde mare and a Hackney stud, Hackney pony stud, they initially actually, starting out.
They started out with a Clyde stud and a Hackney mare.
Okay.
We're on the, I guess they'd be on the third generation of crossing back to themselves.
Gotcha.
But the original started with Grandview Eli, I believe was his name, crossed on a Hackney pony mare. That was the original.
I see.
And our line is, that's all one family. We have the grandmother, the mother, and all her daughters we keep back. So we have six total mares right now.
Cool. Well, the reason I ask, we just bred a Clyde mare to a Hackney stud, Hackney pony stud. And I have no clue what we're going to, that Scott's taking care of all that. So I have no clue what we're going to get.
Well, if it looks good, probably Dwayne would appreciate a phone call by the sounds of it.
Or Darren and Brittany Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The gene pool on these ponies is very tight. There's about two stallions.
Really?
You know, and they're all related with each other. So.
Well, wasn't the one prominent one, Windermere's Bam Bam?
Yes. He's still, Scuts still have him, but can't breed any mares to him. So, but Ben Hirschberger has a pretty good stud, and then there's Lance Bean has one, forget his name, but they're all related, you know, with each other.
So a lot of line breeding going on.
A lot of line breeding.
Are they pretty hardy?
They are. Yeah. They're very, very hardy little ponies, but fun to play with. They're, you know, they got a little spunk to them from the Hackney, but then they also have a little, the Clyde mentality, the laziness, if you want to call it that.
Robert, do you have any comment on that? He got quiet.
He's probably breeding a mare. shoot. Gary, hey, how's polling going with you?
Good. We haven't started yet. had a pretty good show mare that we lost this fall. She was due the first week of January, and we lost her. So that took us to, we've got two mares left, and I think due in about a week. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in there.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Hello.
Okay. I was talking earlier, and I don't know what happened, but I was talking when you asked me that question, Kyle. I tried to say something, and you guys couldn't hear me evidently.
Yeah, you must have had your mute button on.
What did you want to say?
I just said it in Clyde, like the slow foals. I think it's in the stallions sometimes. You get some stallions, the foals are just slower than all get out and don't want to live. And then there's other ones that the colts are very hardy. So, you know, that's my answer to sluggish foaling and slow and line breeding and everything like that. It just, some stallions, it just seems like they're automatic when they just jump up and going to go get nursing and carry on. And other ones want to just lay there and have you feed them with a bottle, you know.
Do you notice a difference as you get older? Like on a foal that is maybe a little bit dopey and lazy and takes a little bit while to get going, when it's an older horse, is say a 3 or 4 year old, and you start driving it, you notice it still has that mentality, or has that got any correlation?
Well, you know, I just think some of them just have a very quiet personality and disposition. And when you put them in harness, I think you flip a switch. So I just think it depends on the horse, you know, to answer that question. I can't say that I've seen that pattern follow, because I've had some colts that were bucket colts, and they were some of the fancier moving ones I had. So I guess I can't say that I just think it's just some horses are bred to hitch, and other ones are bred to just be petted, you know. So it just depends on the horse, I think.
Very good.
Going back to this pony thing, didn't you have a mare that was Like she never got beat, right?
Yeah, she got beat she one got time. Beat I one. Was judging it.
Oh, she got beat twice. She got beat twice. And that's the grandmother and the mother to everything we have.
I see.
She's the foundation mare. We have three daughters and two granddaughters.
Gotcha.
If you're going to start on a breeding program, have a foundation one that doesn't get beat.
Who was the other one that I was one? Who was the other one?
Her daughter.
No, but who was the other judge? Remember?
Where were you judging?
That was the year Ohio State Fair was in Chippewa.
It was just you.
Oh. There was
two judges. It just got beat by her daughter.
Yeah, she got beat by her daughter. It all worked out, but my boys were upset because the wrong one. One in their mind.
That's never happened in the history of Halder shows. The wrong one won.
Well, that day it did. Apparently.
You bet.
Anyways, talk about Halder showing. We'll just go around here and let's just talk about, like, I know we look at multiple things. When you're picking out a horse you guys want to show is, you know, but what's the one thing, say you have a group of two or three yearling or two-year-old mares standing there and they all have kind of different traits a little bit maybe, and you decide to go with, but you only want to show one. What's one thing of those three that they would have to have for you to, you know, to pick them out over the other two? And all of them have, all three are pretty good quality. What's one thing that would stand out to you that is a must have for you to put shoes on them and take them to the ring? Start with Dwayne.
Check the judges book. See who's judging the shows that summer.
That's true.
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Well, to talk about that, checking the judges book. I mean, you can't, for me, you know, you always want to take a horse that a certain judge likes, but you know, throughout a season, There are so many different judges and probably different opinions out there. You have to please yourself, and you have to start your program with what you feel you want to lead and feed, I guess. For me, you know, if I had three that were equal that I was choosing from, as Mark asked, you know, a good hock is key to me. You know, there's a lot of things we want the total package, but a good hind leg, a good hock, goes a long way for me. And then, you know, presence, prettiness, you know, I'll sacrifice some other things for those two items for myself.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think Scott and I've gotten the reputation that it's all about a foot. And while there's a lot of truth to that, you know, there's that saying, no foot, no horse. But I think it's got to be weighed out. And not because Dwayne said it. If I would have gone first, I'm a hock guy. If it's got a bad hock, I'm out. No matter what, no matter how much foot it's got, no matter how much presence it's got. Because in my opinion, the hock's the transmission. And if you don't have a transmission, you're not going anywhere.
The Smith family has been in the meat snack business since 1975. There are now four generations of Smiths working with Glenwood Snacks. Glenwood Beef Jerky is made with solid pieces of 100% premium beef and smoked with real wood smoke. Their jerky is in high protein, low in calories, and darn good to eat. Also, look out for new lines of meat sticks. Look for the Double S Belgians, the equine ambassadors of Glenwood Beef Jerky, at a show near you. Browse cows are many flavors of 100% beef jerky, signature meat sticks, and snack bundles at glenwoodsnacks.com. Follow on Facebook, Instagram, or by calling 208-624-9851. Orders over $50 ship for free. Glenwood Snacks.
Go ahead, Robert.
Well, I agree with what they're both saying here. First of all, Dwayne said it best, you got to make yourself happy, and there's no need to try to make other people happy because you'll never please everybody. So if I had three horses that looked exactly the same, it's the set to the hind leg. So if I'm walking behind them, I want that Gascon to be just right. Hocks come in, touch one another. I don't even have to ask that filly to move because I know she's going to be able to move right in the back for me. And to me, that's the whole thing, the set to that hock, how it's laid in there. And when you see all these guys using all this stuff on the outside to try to do this and that, well, there's a reason they're doing it, because the hock set is not right. So agreed, hock and the way it's set to the hind leg, that's what it's all about.
Well, and that translates to hitching too. I've noticed over the years, most of the ones that I've bought that didn't work out, they didn't stay sound, were ones that had a poor shape to their hind leg. The ones that have... Mm-hmm. a really nice shape to their hind leg, they seem to trot the corners, they stay sound, and they push off their hind end better usually, and that's what drives the front end.
Push. To that point, I remember Robert Hirschberger saying here on the podcast that when he goes and buys a young horse, if it can't move behind, he's not interested. And not necessarily the hocks don't have to be real close together, but if they drag their hind legs, he just has a hard time buying them.
Yep. I want to get your guys' opinion on this, because I think hind motion is important. The way a horse flexes their hind end is important. To me, for hitching, the most important thing to me is the power the horse has in its hind end, the push it has behind. And I think there's a bit of a misconception that because their hocks can snap up to their butthole that they move great behind. But in my experience, some of those horses don't maybe necessarily drive as good, but the horse that can push their hocks and drive their hock up underneath themselves, those are the ones to me that correlate better for hitching. Now, as far as the halter goes, it's maybe a little different, just the angle the judge is watching the horse and stuff. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, you definitely want, you know, there's several different kinds of hock action, I guess, but the kind where they push off of their hind end instead of just, you know, pounding up and down and moving correctly is important in the halter ring for me.
No, I totally agree.
I'm the same.
More important than flex is what you're saying. How much the horse flexes its hock is not quite as important as how much it pushes behind. If you had to choose one or the other, what would you choose?
From a halter perspective, I guess I'm kind of in the flex category. I guess it's, I don't know. I think if it pushes right and it pushes off its hind end, it naturally flexes. If that makes sense. I don't know that I've ever seen one that has got tremendous hock action from a pumping, what, you know, we say pumping their hocks, but would not push off their hind end.
I would agree with you on that, Gary, that, you know, they usually do both, but, you know, some will obviously push off their hind end better than others, but
it just the hind end action, I think, is overlooked by a lot of people that get swept up in just the front end and what's it move like in the front end. And I hate a horse that is ungodly up front and just shuffles like a pig behind.
Yeah, half the time they don't look sound when they do that.
I hate it. So
balance is the key. I mean,
so how does that all relate to you go up the hind leg? Obviously, the shape to the hind leg is important. A horse with a straight hind leg usually doesn't have push or flex, and they usually don't stay sound. How does that relate up into the hip and stuff? Does that have an effect on it? usually. I mean, most of the horses that have a good high croup and a round hip, nice over their hip, usually the shape of their hind leg is pretty nice too. But
I would say that holds true. I mean, if you get, you know, a horse with a nice hip and nice croup, usually they move nice behind, or most generally. You get one that's pretty steep in the croup, usually you got a little bit straighter of a hind leg, and they don't work off their hind end as good.
Which would you rather see, a straight legged one or a little bit more of a sickle hock hind leg?
More set. That's the Clyde in me.
I'm with Gary on that. They almost can't have too much set for me, but
no, me either.
I know there's people out there that don't like that, but
the only thing I'll say is you see the odd one that's a little sickle hawk that they usually pop a curb. Like, it's hard to get one that's sickle hawk that has a beautiful curb sometimes.
Yeah, I've always been like that. We were accused of that going into the, you know, with the Belgians. I remember one time many, many years ago, Gary Hale saying to us that, you know, he was taught that a Belgian horse could not have too straight of a hind leg. And today that's an oxymoron. And he said, you know, we learned that was actually not true. And Scott's the same way. He probably not as much as I am, but I'm like Dwayne. I don't think they can have too much set to their hind leg.
Robert, would you agree on that?
Well, I think when you have a straight hind leg, you have a straight pastern too. And that's not, I don't care for that at all. So I'd rather have a little bit more set and have more slope in the pasterns. And I think that'll give that to you, where the straight hind leg, I just look straight down and boom, there's a 2-inch pastern below there, you know. And I don't care.
That's like pulling your pants down in front of your wall. Never mind, I'll stop.
Really? Yeah.
Robert, would you to comment on that?
I'm gonna think about it for a bit.
So we touched a little bit about feet. Let's talk about what you look in a foot. Would you rather have a big platter of a foot and not much wall to it, or would you rather have nice depth of heel and maybe not grow as big of a flare? Robert, we'll start with you. Which would you rather prefer?
Well, what I prefer and what wins sometimes is two different things. If you have a big old platter that goes out, they bust off so bad in the wintertime, you have lame horses. And if you have a horse with a real solid hard foot, but not as big, that's sometimes more desirable. But, you know, honestly, in the ring, I'd like the hind foot to flare just a little bit more. And the front foot, I was going to take one off, I probably take just a nickel's worth off the front, but I like that hind foot, the flare, if I'm going to show him in halter. And as far as hard to get everything, I do find the ones that have a real shallow foot in the wintertime when the ground is frozen, they're no fun to be around either. So I don't know if anybody else has had that experience, but that's just me.
Sometimes those ones that grow a nice flare on their hind foot, it's usually because their hind leg is built right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. There we go with hind legs. But Rockets All-Stars Flash had the most hardest foot. I mean, you could hardly trim it. And I just think some horses, GT's Hallmark's foot was a foot that grew good, but it broke off a lot. And so it just depends on the horse, I think. But it's some horses are just bred with a harder foot hoof, I think, in my opinion. So I guess I got to have a flare in the back if I'm showing halter. I want to see some flare there and just add a little bit more action to them usually. And of course, you want it all, but that's my opinion. I'd rather have more in the back than in the front. Gary?
Dwayne?
Gary, I would agree with Robert. I would, I want to see a little more flare maybe on the back foot than on the front foot. But, you know, a nice solid foot, a nice depth of, depth of heel and a nice solid foot is better than a big shallow pancake, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. And Shaley and rigid and breaks easy. I like hoof head.
It seems like.
Go ahead, yeah, Robert.
Go ahead, Gary.
Go ahead.
Well, it seems like seedy toe comes in sometimes with them shallow feet that bust off. It seems like they can be a little bit of an issue in the wintertime, especially.
Show ring.
That's just my opinion.
Show ring or out in the mud lot. I like to get back. I like to see hoof head and I like to see heel, especially heel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Get back off of them and in the show ring. And because regardless, a heel never lies. In my opinion, a true heel never lies. Shoeing jobs lie. The guy leading them lies.
The guy running the whip.
The guy running the whip never lies.
I don't know how many times I've said a dog pissing on a fire hydrant since the last time you were on the podcast, Gary.
You know it's good when the crowd, all of a sudden you go down and you make the move and that Heinle, and the, everybody in the sitting there goes, ooh. I was like, who knew? Heel and hoof head.
Well, and to be honest, I think that like from a hitch perspective, and that's always kind of what's blown me away a little bit with the halter hitch. That's one of the biggest discrepancies I see in our industry is big feet win in halter, big flat feet lose in the hitch because them suckers are lame the whole show season. You get in one hard ring and that sucker's crippled. I mean, most hitch horses, the depth of foot is what maintains your soundness of your horse.
And I would say the halter's the same way. I mean, really, if you think about it, like Robert said, I mean, you have the platter footed ones out in a mud lot or something and try to put shoes on. And then even in the summer, like you just seems like you have to kind of keep them wedged up all the time a little bit more so. And well, that's what I found anyway.
Well, and they don't look maybe as comfortable moving sometimes either. Those horses that have them, even like the extreme halter feet, big, flat, they put a 12 inch shoe on it and the horse moves almost like it's sore because it's doesn't have that real fluid motion in front sometimes because it's just a little bit uncomfortable because its soles are.
Well, and usually those are very shallow footed.
Right.
Or just soles not much support. Yeah, not support. Not a lot of support in their heels when they're usually that big.
And man, when that you get a heel bruise, that is a nightmare for a show season because it is hard to get that horse through the rest of the year to be comfortable.
I had a breeder in Olwine, Iowa, tell me one time that if a foot doesn't matter, why is everyone trying to grow one out? You remember saying that, Julio?
Well, they had a size 8 foot, and they had a 14 shoe on them. And I'm like, if your foot doesn't matter, why you got a 14 shoe on? I mean, like, you know, like just you know, like that was my. You'll never keep the horse sound.
No,
ever. You know, like that was always the thing. But again, like these hitch guys, it doesn't matter if they have the greatest foot and the greatest hop and everything else. If they can't hit the neck yoke, it doesn't matter. Yeah, they have to have something that can move and stay sound and go, you know. So it's a fine line, you know.
Well, and that's the thing, too. The higher the horse moves, the harder it hits the ground and the more important all the structures of that horse are because if they barely can trot over a corn cob, they're not very often going to be lame. But the ones that can really trot, they need to have their structures of their limbs and feet are more important because that's what's going to keep them the longevity and the soundness.
And there's where we go about, we were talking about the straight hind pasturing. So there we go. Even in the front pasture, we need to talk about pasturings. If you're going to have movement like that, if there's some giving them pasturing, that's better than a short pasturing straight legged horse, because there's just nothing to give there.
Yep. So a lot of times I've seen in the halter thing, I mean, obviously, I mean, you guys said hawks and all that. How much do you study front legs? Because front legs are one of those things that I feel like you can cover up with shoeing a little bit. If it's a tick pigeon toed or a ticks play footed, you can kind of straighten that out a little bit with shoeing, and you can trim the foot a little different to straighten that out. If it's forward or back in the knees a little, you can try to correct some of that by the way you do the foot. How important is that when you're looking at your halter horses, judging halter horses? Go ahead, Robert.
I don't want them back in the knees whatsoever. I mean, I'd rather have one a little bit pigeon-toed, and you can shoe that out, but back in the knees doesn't work for me. I think long-term, they just get worse usually. So, you know, you want it all, but, you know, I like a nice slope of pasture and some nice hoof head in the front to look at. And obviously, you want everything when you're judging, except there's only about 2 out of 15 that have the package, you know, usually. And so you just got to try to sort it out. And so, I mean, you want them to move nice and straight as possible, but they don't all do that. And so you just try to see which one is balanced, I guess. But I'm no to back in the knees. Gary?
I'm admittedly, I overlook a lot I'm better than I used to be, but I admittedly overlooked a lot more in the front leg. I've got a brother-in-law that's death on a front leg. I've got a brother that's death on a front leg. and they've taught me to pay more attention to it than I get swept up and I get caught up in a hind leg, and I'll admit mm-hmm. that. But you know, when you really, I think it matters more when you're sorting out in your top. You know, the bottom's going to be the bottom regardless. And if the hind leg's not right, I don't care what the front leg looks like. It's not going anywhere anyway. So, but to real quick, to go back to this hip thing, I was also taught, my wife and my brother, not from a confirmation standpoint, but that hip and that croup, being as breeders, that's vitally important to getting that mare, getting the foal out of that mare, getting it to clean, getting her back in foal. If they're poor crouped, poor hipped, those are problems for breeders. Not just maybe separating 3 and 5 in the show ring. There's a purpose that the old timers, I guess we've become that, but the old timers looked at it and said, it's got to have that right hip. It's got to have a good croup. And that's from a breeding standpoint.
Penwoods Equine Products is a family-owned and operated business that strives to support the growth, performance, and longevity of your equine family with our premium nutrition supplements. We make all of our products with locally sourced ingredients right here in the USA, so you can always be sure you're getting the highest quality. We've always been horse people. Our products were developed to take care of our own horses, and we continue to back our supplements with real-world horse owner experience. We're proud of the results, and we love sharing our generations of equine knowledge to help meet all of your horses' needs. We want to get to know you and your horses, and we're here to help with any questions you have. So reach out to us. You're part of the Penwoods family. You can visit us at penwoods.com, email us at info@penwoods.com, or follow us on social media.
I would agree with all that. And I would just add that, you know, like Gary said, I think a lot of us overlook front legs. We get swept up looking at the hind legs and all that. But I think we should pay more attention to the front legs, as show people, breeders, judges, whatever. I think we should take that into consideration as about as much as we do a hind leg.
So to kind of bounce off of that, and we'll start with you, Dwayne, you have a horse that moves incredibly high, but it it is a little pigeon toed maybe and wings out just a tick, and you have a horse that doesn't move half as high but perfectly straight, you're judging halter. What would you prefer? All other things being identical.
If all other things,
which is never the case, but we're speaking in theory.
If all other things were, you know, identical, the horse that wouldn't move as high would win for me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like motion and all that, but correct motion and balance does something for me.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. The whole purpose of the move in a halter class that started out originally, my understanding is, was to see if it moved correctly. Right. And, but like everyone else, I love a great moving horse, and it's still a show, and you want to put the best move on you can. But the purpose of it was originally for the move in the halter class was to see if it moved sound correctly, and sticking to those roots, you've got to stay with the, in your example, the horse that moves with a little less animation, and it, but it moves perfectly correct.
Robert, what's your perspective on that?
Exactly. I mean, they pretty much just said what I was thinking while they were saying it. So, you know, if you're standing there, I mean, it all depends that we have all kinds of variety of different judges. So you have hitch judges, you have halter judges, you have whatever. So if you're judging, just try to stay with the pattern you like. And you know, some people like beautiful heads. Some people don't look at a head, you know, the croup, some people it affects, some people it doesn't. We all want the perfect animal. Unfortunately, they don't make very many of them, and it's very hard to breed them, and it's very hard to buy them. And as breeders, we spend all year trying to get a mare in Britain full. You never know when she's going to fold. Then we want it to live. Then you have vet bills. Then you take it to a sale, and it just doesn't move good enough for the $100,000 horse. And it's very, you know, you put so much effort, energy into it, but we know it didn't move that well. That's why we took it to a sale, you know. So it's just one of them deals where, you know, like it's the people are, I always say the people are way more educated now than they were 20 years ago, as far as buying and stuff like that. And it's, they have resources to do more with horses, and harnesses are better, and wagons are lighter, and drivers are better. And it's just a lot of stuff involved, you know?
So well, I've heard people say, opinion. I've heard people, random people and some, I mean, Amish say, you know, come maybe watch a halter class. Really good moving mare, or gelding or stud in there, you know, just cranking it, moves pretty straight. Then another one comes out, doesn't move quite as good, wins the class. They say, why are we trotting them for? I think you've kind of answered this, but what would your response be to someone who would ask that question? Why are we trotting them if it's not taken into consideration?
To see if the horse is sound. At the end of the day, if we don't have a sound horse, why, you know, you just leave them in the barn, you don't show them. So we're doing this to see if the horse is sound and travels correctly. That's why we're doing it. You know, you want a balanced, beautiful horse. That's my answer to that, I guess.
Well, I guess just my perspective a little bit. I think in different times I've judged, I would be probably more of a hitch guy than a halter guy. I've judged some good halter classes as well, but I like to see when you get to the championship class and you're picking out your champions, that's where, to me, that's where you might separate it a little bit. I mean, that's, you want your champion to go up and down the ring and have that look to them like, I am the champion. And that's, to me, that's where it becomes a little more important. If your champion, you get to your championship class and your champion goes up and down the ring and doesn't have that look about it, that's where I have a challenge a little bit with the move. I mean, to me, that's where the move is, like, you want that thing to go up and down and be like,
well, so
yeah, go ahead, Dwayne.
Go ahead, Robert.
I think most of the time, the ones that get to that class, most of them, the reason they're in that class is they, most of them can move pretty good usually. I mean, like, when you're doing reserve and stuff like that, that's one thing. But when you're doing it for the Supreme class, most of the time, I would say most of them move pretty good usually. And I agree with you, Kyle. I mean, it's way more appealing to the crowd and to everybody involved that they move, that you want them to move like that, you know.
It's still a show.
And that's what, go ahead. It's still a show. That's right, Gary.
You're not out in the Didsbury, Alberta, looking at perching mares on 7,000 acres and trying to pick that next mare out. It's a show. It's still a show.
You're going to get a hard time for, you're going to get a hard time for picking Didsbury, Alberta.
I know. Okay, we'll switch it to Viking. All right.
Mm-hmm. You can just wheel just another 20 miles and go to Owhattan.
Exactly.
Shoot. It's incredible how many world champions have come out from about 10 miles apart in basically BFE, Alberta.
Well, if you want to go and see the overall, the most impressive draft horse farm in the world with horses start to finish is in Owhattan. Owhattan? Owhattan?
Owhattan, I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's very impressive. But going back to that.
Shout out to Willoway Clydesdales if any of our listeners don't know. Shout out
to the Gradacos. But going back to that in the show, that I'm not saying it's right, but when I, if I'm judging and I get to the champion class, I don't watch them and you have a move during the, in the champion drive. I stand off to the side. I'm not saying that's right, but I've already sorted out my rights and wrongs in the sound in the class. And hopefully if they've gotten to that champion drive, I want to see him move and show like a show horse. That's why I stand off to the side. And I can't always do that. Just standing there looking at him behind. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that's just my.
You like to see how they profile.
Yeah, moving. Exactly.
Yeah. That's one of the hardest things when you watch them, like a horse run to and from you. Yeah. You can see the hind motion really easy standing behind the horse, obviously, but the front motion, it's hard to really kind of,
it is,
detect a lot from, I mean, the way the horse profiles itself and carries its front end, maybe where its hind legs are driving to or where its front legs are going. It's harder to see when they're coming straight at you.
It's harder for me to watch them coming and going. And if I'm questioning a lameness, I'll have them even go again, because you call a horse lame or you think it's a little off, you better be damn sure.
Yeah.
And that's why I'll stand off. I don't know. Dwayne, do you?
No, I would agree with you on that. I mean, you've watched, by the time you get to the champion drive, you've probably watched them go twice from behind. And, you know, you want to see that, but getting a side profile, you can kind of pick out your champion.
See what they look like.
You know, a champion horse should look like it wants to be a champion, I guess, in my opinion.
So hitch people have been accused of being point chasers. We now have a classic halter series. How does the classic halter series affect your guys' show schedules, and has it created some excitement for you to go show? Has it gave you something to strive for? Dwayne, you've won it. Robert, you think you've been reserved the two initial, the two first ones, I guess. What's your guys' thoughts on what the classic halter series is doing and how it's evolved and changed and how it's affected your showing schedule or ability or what you're doing with your horses? Go ahead, Dwayne.
Well, it's definitely for me and my family, it's created a sense of excitement. You know, we might have might have added a show or so more just to make sure that we, you know, maintain our points. It adds another platform to our so-called boring thing that we do of showing halter horses, but to go to the Classic Series finals and just be part of it and be there to present your animal, those 3 days in front of those crowds is, I would encourage every halter, serious halter show person to try and be part of that at some point. It's a great experience.
Robert, go ahead.
Well, I've been involved with them, and yeah, it gives a person a chance to showcase their farm, and they introduce the animals, and they do a good job of promoting it, and people can see it. And I know anybody that's been there showing, I can't say that any person has ever said, I don't ever need to come back here again. This is a waste of time. I certainly have never heard that. And it just gives people an opportunity to showcase the breeding program and what they have. And, I think it's a great platform, what Dwayne just said, to take your horses out, and it's supposedly the best of the best are there. So I encourage people to get involved and talk to your show people that run the shows and get your shows involved in the Classic Series and, halter. And I do think it'd be great to see more and more horses there, newer people and stuff like that. So I definitely am all for it.
Well, first of all, we haven't participated, but that's got nothing to do with the Classic Series finals. It's all because our careers have just engrossed us, and we don't show in as many shows as we used to anyway. But I commend the Classic Series for putting this together. It creates excitement. We followed it all along, and it's a great deal. Gives the opportunity for, as Dwayne and Robert said, for the breeders to showcase their farm, their animals, and it's a great thing. Maybe if we retire someday, I'll start chasing points.
Well, I think that we have to have reason to motivate horsemen, owners, and I mean, yeah. It's world shows, national shows, yeah. The finals. I mean, you have to give people reason to show their horses, and it just gives one more reason for people to show a little bit. And I think we talked a little bit about it earlier. I think it's very important that the halter industry is alive and thriving, because that's going to supplement and support our, if the breeders aren't breeding horses, there's not horses to drive either. Yeah. So it all goes together hand in hand, and it's important.
Yep. No, for sure. It would be great, as Robert said, seeing some new people come in, because I agree with him. I've yet to hear somebody say I'll never come back again, because it's put on right. And it's a good deal, a good platform to showcase your farm and your, for sure. I think studs, I mean, if you can get your stud in there to showcase in front of that crowd and puts on a show, I wouldn't know why I wouldn't help you to breed some more mares. That's bottom line, you know, that sold out crowd on Saturday night, usually. And it's quite a showcase, but, no, that's good to hear. And yeah, we want to grow it some more and try to get more horses involved in it.
It's the best of the best. The elite are there, and very, very, very impressive.
Plan ahead for the Young Living Fall Festival and Draft Horse Show at the Young Living Lavender Farm and Distillery in Mona, Utah. This beloved tradition for both locals and visitors is a family-friendly way to settle into the fall season. Not only do these 3 days offer nonstop fun, like jousting, pony rides, 2 exclusive concerts, and 2 PRCA rodeos, but as you tour the farm, you'll also get an insider's look at the seed-to-seal quality commitment that sets Young Living apart and guarantees the premium essential oil Young Living is known for. The festival celebrated Draft Horse Show will host 18 of the top pitches from around the country, driven by expert teamsters. These gentle giants will demand your attention with power and pure majesty. There's so much to do and see at the Fall Festival and Draft Horse Show, so come explore, discover, and make some memories with your family.
A few more questions I have. One is, when you're judging a show and, you know, you have Belgian Perchin, Clyde Shires, do you judge them different? Like if you're judging a Perchin halter, you know, say at the Ohio State Fair or somewhere, you know, or you go to the Feathered Show in Shipshawana, big Clyde show, or, you know, at Indiana, the National Belgian Show there, big halter classes. Do you judge those breeds a little different, or do you still go with the same mindset coming into those shows? This is what you're going for. This is what you're going to do. Yeah. Whoever wants.
Well, in Clydesdales, you have to judge them different. You're looking for hair. You're looking for.
So you're telling me that, Robert, you would consider hair does matter when you're judging.
Absolutely. I spend hours and hours. I spend more time on hair than I do grooming a horse. So you have to. And so I think it's important. And to me, that the Belgian and Perchin are just a little bit different breed. I mean, the Perchin's just, it has changed a little bit. It's a little bit finer boned horse. The Belgian, I think, is just a little bit draftier yet. And the Shire horses, you know, they have hair, but not as much hair maybe as the Clydesdales do. So you have to judge them different.
You can appreciate a Clydesdale enough if it has beautiful hair, because you know how much work it is, and you know how much better it is to fit a Clydesdale that has beautiful hair, and how terrible it is to fit a Clydesdale that has terrible hair.
Uh-huh. Robert,
go ahead.
Just to ask a question, I guess, for you, when you're judging those, you judge them all a little different, but your overall, what you're looking for in, you know, all aspects that we've talked about, you would still kind of use those same key points, right?
You have to. Yeah. I mean, you still want the same, the way the set of hock we talked about, and not straight pasturans and ice pasturans and all that. You still want all of that. But, you know, it's just they're all built different. I mean, so you have to, you know, we know the strength of each breed. So for the most part, and we talked about Harem and Shires, or maybe they sometimes seem to be, I don't know, see, some seem bigger and longer, you know, and so I think they're all bred a little bit different. I think in the Perchins, to me, the Belgians have seemed to have a little bit more hock action recently than the Perchins have had. I could be wrong, but from what I see, that's a little bit the case. You know, I'm hoping the Perchins can get back to that part, but does anybody disagree with me there?
No, I think the Perchins, like, and that's what I was kind of getting at earlier when I said that I think the Perchins have maintained a really good push in their hind end. They've lost some hawk action. Like, they're not wearing their front ends with those big headsets without push behind. Like, there's push there. It's just they're lacking maybe some hawk flexion.
Exactly.
But Mark, you asked, you know, do you judge them all the same? I think you've still got to start with your roots and your basics. Good horse, a good horse. Doesn't matter what breed it is, what color it is, how much hair it's got, all that. And then you go to the finer points. Rod Dare said something to me one time, a long, long time ago. And he said, breed character has to count for something.
Exactly. I agree, Gary.
And that's very, very true. The breed character has to count for something. There's nothing any better than a good or great Clydesdale mare. There's nothing any better than a great Clydesdale mare.
Steve Gregg always says, when you're in like in Lansing, when it's the Supreme championships or whatever, he said, when you ever in doubt, just go with the Clyde mare.
Exactly. White, nice hair. I agree.
There's nothing better than Clydesdale mare. And there's nothing worse than a bad one.
Yeah, you know, I agree. Yeah. But yeah, and that's like to Robert's point, you have a Clyde with beautiful hair. everything can look better. Like you saddle soap her hoof heads and stuff, you can make her heel look like it's 10 inches wide. You know, I mean, there's just all those little details. When you put the effort in on a Clydesdale, you can, it's just breathtaking.
Well, I think in the, if they're all together, that's in the Clydesdale world, that's about the only time the Clydes can actually really compete with a top end of horses is in the halter class. In the hitch classes, it's very tough to get around some of these Perchins and Belgians with Clydes. I mean, there's some guys out there that's got some great hitches, so I'm not taking that away from them. But in the halter class, they seem to be able to compete with them better. More equal field, I would say. Am I right or wrong?
No, you'd be right. Go ahead,
Dwayne. Yeah, I would agree with Robert on that one.
Do you agree with them about the breed characteristics?
No, I would agree that, you know, you got to, when you're judging, you got to use your points that you want to hold true on all of them, but each breed is going to be a little different.
Probably the most challenging judging you're going to do is when you have a whole bunch of different styles in a class, and it's, you get a pattern in that first class and you say, this is what I like. And then the second class comes in and there's like a clear best horse in there that's different than what you already started your first.
And then you hear chirping from the rail, this guy doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, he's not following a good pattern.
One, the other class, and now this class, he takes something totally different. Am I right?
Well, you go with what Gary, you go with what Gary Neverdahl said, you always go with the best horse. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
That's the best horse is the best horse. So you just
don't overthink it.
To me,
I'm glad this is.
Yeah, don't overthink it. Just the best horse in that class is the best horse. Yeah.
Well, I think that's true to hitch judging, halter judging, whatever. I think when somebody gets themselves in trouble judging, it's usually when they overthink things.
When they overthink.
Absolutely.
Go with your gut and be done with it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, don't overthink it. It's,
and I don't know. I promised myself I wouldn't do it. Pet peeve, though, is a remove and the best horse move. Then they don't use it.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I'll second that.
Oh, my God.
Why remove it?
Step back. Take a deep breath. You've got them lined up. I'm saying you're judging. Step back. And if you want to switch them, do that. Don't ask them to remove.
And if you do ask them to remove.
If you have to ask them to do remove, then by God, the best horse, best moving horse, better win it.
Yeah.
Because that says, in theory, you're all locked up in the top two, three, four, whatever. And it's going to come down to the move. And then you don't use the best moving horse and you leave them.
So what I'm getting is you're not against removing them.
No, I don't care.
But if you remove
them, do it for the right reasons. Yeah. Don't do it for the wrong.
Right.
And the wrong says you're scratching your head and you're not sure what to do. That's fine. But step back and don't ask them to remove. Just make your decision. If you want to remove them, fine. But that's because you're, in theory, you're locked up
to the best moving one winning the class.
To the best one moving, best moving win, excuse me, wins the class.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. It's like a redrive in the hitches. You know, whoever's got the best go in the redrive should win. And same way with removing a halter horse. I couldn't agree more with you. Yep.
Let's go around the table and go all-time favorite halter horse. Dwayne, it can be yours. It can be somebody else's. Just a horse that stands out in your mind in the halter ring that was like, I'm striving for that. I know what few of it you've had.
You've got me on
pretty
that
good
one.
Ones. But wow. You can do a couple. That's
yeah, fine. That's fine. Maybe you'd have a favorite Clyde, a favorite Perchin, or a favorite Belgian or something. Robert, you got any off the top of your head?
I mean, listen, there's a lot of beautiful horses out there. So it's a very, very difficult thing to pick a horse because the ones that were beautiful when they were 2 and 3 year olds weren't maybe as nice when they were 10 year olds. So, you know, with Hawk Action and everything, I liked Anderson's Ovation. She won as a 2 year old and then came back as an I think, 7 or 8 year old. She was reserve senior at the World. And then she was at the next World Show, where she was the third time she went there, she was 10, and she won her class out of a big, good class. So Amerita can do that long. And she had tremendous hawk action. She was big. So, but there's been some amazing Perchins. There's been some outstanding Belgians. And the Belgian that you're going to pick from 20 years ago, today probably wouldn't do near as well. So it's just very difficult to answer that question and make it sound right or look, you know. It is what it is, I guess. You know, there's some beautiful horses out there for sure in each breed. I'll pick Anderson's Ovation.
Well, I guess for me, I guess I'll stay in my own barn. I'm sure there's better ones out there, but the Double J Lisa Mare that we won the World Show with, she wasn't perfect, but I'd love to have another one like her.
And you won with her in 2016, right?
2016. Yeah. She won the national show and then she went on and won the World Show.
Some people like a 2-finger curve. I believe she had about a 4-finger curve.
Close.
I mean, she had a curve on her that was unreal.
And she was about 18.2, probably somewhere in that range, and moved pretty decent for her size.
Gary, you're going to have a tough call in yours, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, Robert, and I'm glad you guys went, because I've been sitting here racking my brain. I'm going to go away. We owned her at one time, and we showed her the last time she ever won. We didn't own her, but a Belgian mare called Jezra Trevers Lorraine. She was a four.
I remember her.
Huh?
I remember her, yeah.
She was a four-time All-American. Stropes raised her. And she was by Ellen C. Trevor out of a J. Lou mare. And Gary Hale, Chris Jess, and my brother Scott and I all owned her, bought her as a foal. And we had a chance to sell her to Harmon and Powers for $10,000 as a baby. We'd showed her that as a foal. And being the genius I am, I said, she's never going to be good enough. She's never going to be big enough. And we need to unload her. And $10,000 was a lot of money. And my brother said, she will come back and bite us in the ass from here on until she dies. And that's why he's the smart one. We sold her. And like I said, she was a four-time All-American. And we won with her. I think Ron Harmon ended up with her. And at the NABC, I don't know which one it was. It was the one in Indianapolis.
2000.
And there was a pool going around that Greenmead Bess was going to be champion mare. And I just kept saying, you got to win your class first. And we won the class with her. And then that was the end of it. But I mean,
Craig Grange was judging.
Yes, Craig was judging, and he and I discussed this about every time we run into each other. but she'd be my all time favorite. Quite a mare.
Do you have one, Mark? Well, I don't know. I've been brainstorming too, but you know, I wasn't really in the show world then, but I just remember seeing the horse that I thought was impressive, and he was a gelding, Sterling's Mike. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I love that horse. His profile, he had a, you know, good sound foot to him. I don't know. I always thought he was an impressive gelding. I liked him. Not saying it's right or wrong to pick a gelding, but
yeah,
he was a damn good horse.
Mark, he was a beautiful horse. My father owned him and sold him in Columbus, and he was a gorgeous horse. Mm-hmm. That's where Sterling's bought him.
Top of my head, I guess. I mean, probably the best one I ever personally showed was actually the mother of Robert's mare that you showed the last few years.
Cypress
Creek Animes Amaretta was her name. Yeah. I showed her the one year as a 3-year-old, and she was pretty cool. I mean, probably one of the more impressive halter horses I've seen show was the gelding of Mark Berry's. What was SCVF Alex? Or
yeah.
They called him JP, yep, and they just recently retired him. But in halter, that sucker was... I mean, he is pretty... I mean, you had to hang on to that booger.
I up showed and down that the booger ring. Best of breed at Indiana State Fair one year.
Yeah.
And I told Mark, I will never show that horse again. I mean, he was something else.
Oh, he could and go up and down that ring. Incredible.
He had Ross show him at the NABC then, but
I think actually the year you won with Lisa,
he was champion gelding.
He wasn't and impressive.
No offense to Lisa. I mean, probably halter wise standing there, Lisa was probably better, but when that sucker went up and down the ring, it was just breathtaking watching him go up and down. I remember watching that Supreme class. It was like, holy, like it made your heart skip when you seen him trot. He was awesome in halter and in hitch. He was a good hitch horse too, but in halter, there's just something about him in halter. He just looked like he was going to run away.
I was hoping he would a few times.
Shoot. Gary, let's talk about the time you went to the Royal. And you were showing some Clydes and got beat by a guy on a wheelchair. What's the story on that?
we had a learning experience in Toronto, and I do remember Baby Blue is 10th place in Canada.
You think that blue ribbons are a great thing, but yeah, the Baby Blue just isn't quite as fun. Huh?
Red's one, Blue's two, Baby Blue's 10. Anyway,
you'd sooner have a brown one than a baby blue one. Huh?
And we were showing some Clyde mares up there. Scott and I were, and you don't have a trail person. In Canada, and we're upstairs, and I just made the statement, I think to Rhonda Cole, that things just couldn't get any worse than they were that day. And for those of you that have been to the Royal and seen it, you're looking down into the halter ring. You with me, Robert? You know what I'm talking about?
I am. I know what you're talking about.
Looked down into the ring, and Rhonda came back from the standing at the cage back into our aisle. Look, and she said, "You know how you said things can't get any worse?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "You just got beat by a guy in a wheelchair." And she was a very, very good mare, but I'm not sure we should have been 10th and him one. He should have been one, and we should have been maybe 3, 4, 5 somewhere in there.
There's something about the Royal too. It just stings a little worse.
Yeah.
Well, the people watching the halter, they get into it, like the gallery, you know, sitting on the side. And
well, and especially Clyde Halter Day, there's people from all over the world there watching.
Absolutely.
Rod Dare always said that the winners at the Royal, when they trot up and down the ring, there's a different sound.
Yeah.
The crowd, the way the horse's feet echo in there, and just, it just sounds different.
Summit Professional Services, a marketing team that specializes in all things equine. The Summit team is a full-service media and designing firm that offers the absolute top quality and design to the equine industry. The Summit team is excited to announce their new and upcoming website that will allow you to view, purchase, and download photos and videos all from the tip of your fingers. Interested in promoting your farm or getting an on-farm shoot of your horses or products? Now is the perfect time to do so. Be sure to look them up. They're on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Call Summit Professional Services 260-702-9929 or email them at summitsproservices@gmail.com. Once again, their phone number 260-702-9929 or email summitproservices@gmail.com.
Anime, Hillmore Anime. She was one that, speaking of good Clyde mares, she was pretty impressive to watch.
What's speaking of, what's your favorite show you guys like to go and show at? I think we touched base with you this before, Gary, but
I, Indiana, I mean, home and that, but I love the Royal. I love showing at the Royal because that most of the times don't have to whip.
You don't have to roll
stay in my dirty clothes and sawdust legs or paint feet or whatever. The Royal's a fun show. You know, you remember those things, that sounds and smells and different things. The stall, the box stall doors, the sound that makes, that when you lift the bars up the handle, you could drop me anywhere in the world and make that sound, and that's a box stall in Toronto.
And those stalls were built like pre-war, and they're still
bull elephants.
Oh, some of those you gotta start wiggling now to get them out.
Exactly. But that clank, right? You hear that?
I thought you were gonna say, "Is somebody feeding this horse sulfur?"
Going back to shows, I mean, I guess I would probably pick Indiana. You know, the air conditioned barn is wonderful. The stalls are not the Royal Winter Fair stalls, that is for sure. But I think I can tell that we're all getting older because you guys are talking about the Royal like it was seven deep. I was at the Royal last year; it wasn't, and so it's definitely changed up there. But Indiana, when you come in for the Supreme class tonight, if you're lucky enough to get in that class, place is packed full, the spotlight. To me, the Indiana State Fair is that's where I like to show it.
The sound of a Belgian's foot hitting a tarp front stall.
Dwayne,
what about you, Dwayne?
I would agree with both of you. I mean, Indiana, just, you know, the air-conditioned barn, and then, like you just said, if you're fortunate enough to make it to the Supreme class, I mean, that's a great time and a great feeling.
Kind of where everybody comes together, kind of brings the best of the best, it seems like. And go ahead.
Going back to the Royal, I went to the Royal when I was 20 years old, probably. And I remember if you left your spot when they were showing Clyde Haller in the front, you would never get that spot back. I mean, it was so, they were 18 deep. Cooper was on the other side there by the door, soaping in the cold wind. And it was unbelievable. But, you could have got that spot at pretty much anywhere. It's definitely changed a little bit, that's for sure.
I remember Bill Muir went to fly back to Scotland after glycerining hoof heads and soaping. It was right after, I'm sure, they started doing more testing in the airports. And they accused him of building a bomb, I think, after Clyde Haller Day, by the contents on his hands.
Your favorite breed to show?
Well, for me, it's Belgians. I haven't really showed anything else.
I was holding out for the Clyde pony. Clyde
ponies.
Well, did you fit them or show them any different, Dwayne?
Not really.
What you look for in a Clyde pony would be similar to what you do. It's draft horse characteristics.
For us, it's draft horse characteristics. But for me, I'm trying to let my boys do that and just kind of watch, see how that feels. It's kind of fun.
Hands down, Belgians. It's just, I don't know. It's natural. I bitched about the remove. But if we're fortunate enough, well, if Dwayne's in first and we're in second, I always tell Scott, get your ass up on that rail. We're going to win this thing. And it very rarely happens. But it's good in theory. On a remove in Indiana with a Belgian horse, because if you're in first, you don't want to have to remove. But if you can try to make the redrive, like you said, in a hauler class, there is nothing better, nothing any more fun than showing at Indiana right up on the rail.
Yep. I would agree. That's the show that it's fun to do a remove.
Yep.
Yeah, you can push them right on there. They can't see over it, shy away from it. I mean, they just
and you
put
them
on there and go.
For what it's worth, you can usually it's kind of hard along the edge. You can hear it pound a little bit, and it just makes it a better feeling. Cool.
Yeah.
Robert?
Well, I've showed Belgians, I've showed Perchins, I've showed Clydesdales. I've never showed very many Shires. So I'm getting older, so I'm going to probably pick the Clydesdales. They just seem a little bit more laid back for me now when I'm leading them and stuff. And but I love all three breeds. And I agree totally with Gary there about the remove, even though he doesn't want the judge to remove. But I have no problem, especially if I'm in second, to have that remove. I like that, you know. And you know, it's like he said, somebody else said, it's a show for the people to be watching too. And when it's a big class and you can remove the top two or three, you know, I agree with Action as why you should be moving them, but there's some tough decisions that have to be made. And you always want to make sure you do it as right as you possibly can. So, but I agree. I think we've all agreed Indiana's where we kind of like to show for a ring, but there's a lot of great rings out there, but that's the one that I like to show at. And listen, there's nothing wrong with the Royal Winter Fair going down that rail either. Mm-hmm. So,
well,
I pick Clydesdales, I guess. Go ahead.
One more, if we have time. I think we do.
Sure.
Gary said his pet peeve. Dwayne, what's your pet peeve?
Oh, you're saying my pet peeve in the show ring?
Yeah, like getting judged, you know, in a halter class, something a judge might do that your pet peeve.
Maybe I have several, but
go ahead.
No, the one that I'm going to echo what Gary said, you know, it's happened more often than I like, but you know, a judge looks like he's having a hard decision, and he, you know, he pulls the first two out and removes them. And I feel when you get to that stage, you better be using the better moving horse. I guess that would be my pet peeve when they don't move them at that point. That'd be the one that I would use for my number one.
Do you guys try to strategize when you go, like, say you have a big, powerful mare and one of your toughest competitors in the class might have a smaller mare? Would you strategize in that class to get in there right beside her and put your big
mare? Absolutely. Get right up on them.
Yep.
Get right in there with them.
Yeah. And if yours stands really good, would you, and the one beside you doesn't stand as good, would you do the old, hey, hey. I mean, is there some of that that goes on in the ring, or
I would try not to, because I don't like when people do it to me.
Yeah. That's crossing the line.
That's crossing the line.
Yeah.
I think you used to see some of that earlier on years ago. I'm not going to mention any names, but I think I don't see and hear as much of that now.
Most of what I show has got a mule bit, a Belgian gelding with a mule bit, and you're hanging on for dear life. And my thought is, if you wiggle that whip one more time, I'm going to shove it up your ass. but I mean, I guess everybody's a little different. But
Robert, you got any pet peeves?
Oh God. Well, I mean,
any strategies? Do you have any strategies either? But he won't share strategies. Well, are you kidding me?
I guess I'm going to say this, and some people may get offended, but when I'm showing and there's a horse, one or two horses in front of me, and they have a shoe that's 4.5 to 5 inches past their heel, and the judge is looking at the foot like it's a really, really good foot, and I'm like, are you serious? And so is it a shoeing contest or is it a draft horse show? Which one is it? So for me, I mean, come on, people. Some of this stuff is out of sight.
I always say, and this is maybe not, if radio.
It's not between us.
Kids are listening. Right. Hit pause. Uh-huh. But I always say, if you put a Trojan Magnum on a small Peter, it's still a small Peter.
Yeah. And you can't put that any clearer than that. And so when the guy's up there and the judge is walking around a horse smiling, and because he thinks the shoeing is just amazing and there is no foot there. I mean, really, is that what this is all about? If it's a shoeing contest, why don't we enter the shoeing contest? That's my pet peeve. Gary?
I will.
Robert, could you be any more clear? I'm not, yes, not sure where you stand on that.
Yeah, I'm old enough now that, you know, I fear they can boot me out. I'm going to retire here soon. So
I hear
it is what it is.
I hear you.
But anyway, that's just my opinion. A good foot is a good foot. You don't have to put a bigger shoe on yet to make it a bigger foot, you know.
Amen.
But anyway, that's all I got.
Strategy, it used to be, you know, people line up and wanted to be first. You always wanted to be the first ones in, that kind of thing. And we were kind of taught that, but I don't think it matters as much. The more I judge,
I would probably,
it doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's first, who's last. Mm-hmm. Just get in there and you got the best horse.
If you have a horse that takes a few minutes to settle down and stand quiet, maybe you go in a little later, but
yeah.
Yep.
I always have quite a few horses in the show, so I always prefer to go in towards the last, because you can never be the first guy, because there's always one guy that's only got two horses and he's standing there for 45 minutes prior to his class and he goes ramming in there, so you never get ahead of him anyway. So I just try to go in last, you know. So towards the end is probably my preferred spot to go into, somewhere towards the end. Dwayne?
I would agree with Robert. Just on a personal level, I like to go towards the end.
A lot of times my whip guy can't be in with me, and who knows what, because they're getting something else going on. So by the time you move up halfway up the line, then that person gets in there so you can go ahead and do your thing. And so that's kind of some of the things I think of when I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do.
You ever think about who you're going to replace your whip man with, Robert?
I had to. He retired last year.
I know. That's why I asked.
You know, are you available, Gary, or not?
No, I'm.
I've been watching you.
I've been scouting.
Well,
Wagner is the coolest ring whip man I've ever seen. Nick Wagner looks like Spider-Man following.
This is a true story, and it happened last year because I had to have a whip man at the Mech Center show for the Classic Series halter. So Jonas Helmuth was with me, and my nephew Freeman Detweiler, and then Cynthia, Jonas's fiance, was with him. Well, she's the whip person. She goes, "Well, I've not done this much," and thank God the Belgians went in first. And so in that first night, so we go in there. And I said, she comes over, she goes, "Nobody wants me, which side you want me? What do we want me to do?" I don't know. I'm like, "Just calm down." I said, "Look over there. See that gal going right there? That's Dwayne Miller's wife. Watch her. She knows how to whip horses. So Dwayne, I think your wife does a great job whipping horses. And that this is a true story, because you can go ask Cynthia or Jonas the story. That's what I told her. I said, "Watch that gal whip that horse." And so, you know, it just depends what you want. You know, some people are more aggressive and some people whatever, but she does a very nice job trailing a horse.
So she's officially your trailer now?
Well, if I could get her, but I probably won't be able to get her, but I'm giving her, I just think, you know, everybody has a different way of doing things. And, so it's, you know, I remember seeing Gary Hale running the whip, and I've seen Gary Neverdahl. There's a lot of similarities there. So everybody has a person they look up to, or there's somebody they see that on why they do things certain ways. And I think Gary, you run a whip a lot like Gary Hale ran the whip. Jack was always complaining to him that he was getting run over and was telling Gary what to do. And Gary didn't even listen. He was just snapping the whip. Well, I've seen Scott do the same thing to you. So I would say there's a lot of similarities there, you know.
Biggest ass chewing I ever took in my life was from my brother saying, "If you put this bitch on me one more time, you're going to bleed her from here out. Uh-huh. Do not do that again. Do you understand me? Aye, Captain.
While we're on the, you know, the halter showing and everything we've talked about, I mean, I think, you know, a whip person is it can make you or break you in the halter ring. Somebody that's just running along and not paying attention and doesn't know the horse, can really mess things up. And a good whip person can know that horse and can really help you win classes.
No, I agree, but I do feel, not at the shows, but at some of these sales, this whip thing is completely out of control. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I would,
you know, yeah. I'm not even sure they know why they're doing it, you know. That's just me, I guess.
Well, when they start again, tying Gary, bags on them for the halter shows, we know we're all in trouble.
Yep. Anything else anybody has to chime in here before we close her up?
Oh, appreciate being asked. Good.
No, nope, thank you very much.
First time I've ever been at this table and no booze was involved.
And you're at the horse sale.
And at a horse sale.
Oh, and my goodness.
And the back room of Shipshewana Harness. There's very few finer places in the world than this room right here.
Yeah. In fact, I look over there and there's a great transportation calendar.
Robert, Pleasant View, Michaela, I believe.
She was a wonderful mare.
That was the only one that came off the top of my head. It's probably not even her.
I don't think it's her.
Yeah. But when you drove her single, she couldn't move at all. And you put her with her full sister Melody, you could hardly hang on to them. So they're all bred different, that's for sure.
Very good. Well, thanks for coming on, guys. I appreciate it.
All right.
Very entertaining and a lot of good topics in here. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks for having
Bye-bye.
Us.
The Redrive Podcast is supported by the Draft Horse Journal, the world's foremost heavy horse publication, now celebrating 60 years of quarterly releases since 1964. If you work, breed, exhibit, pull, log, trade, or simply admire heavy horses, the journal should be coming to your mailbox. Visit drafthorsejournal.com to subscribe today.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you drop by a Reinhold Tack and Western Wear mailbag, podcast@naclassicseries.com. Once again, podcast@naclassicseries.com. Any questions or feedback you might have, we would love to hear from you. I hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great week, and we'll see you down the road.